The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, my name is Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, National Resource. As he takes off his glittery gold oversized glasses, his eyes dart away from the computer screen. I can feel his fatigue and the anger he's trying to contain as he searches for the right words. When he turns back to me, his forehead is damp, evidenced by its shine. Frustrated, he wipes his brow. We are like a dysfunctional family who keeps secrets and doesn't want to talk about it, he continues, describing American society's aversion to discussing the enduring impact of slavery. They don't want to talk about the actual thing. They want to act like the actual thing never happened, so that there's never a healing that can take place. White people are afraid that we want vengeance, that they can't acknowledge the truth. But we don't want vengeance, he adds. We want our rights. We want equality. We want to be treated like human beings. We want to know that we can walk out of our houses and not be under the threat of death every single day simply because of the color of our skin. The only way we can get to such a promised land, Porter says, is by having necessary conversations that bring about a reckoning. Ironically, conversation starter is exactly how I would describe the entertainer. For the unaware, Porter is a national treasure, though the world is just coming to realize it. A native of Pittsburgh, he was raised by his mother, who is disabled, and his stepfather. After coming out at age 16, he was bullied for just existing. My masculinity was in question from the moment I could comprehend thought, he tells me. I was never masculine enough by society standards to walk the earth. Finding solace in music and theater, he landed a drama scholarship to Carnegie Mellon, and upon graduation, he moved to New York City with his sights set on Broadway. After serving as an understudy for 1992's Five Guys Named Mo, he got his first big break as a teen angel in the 1994 Broadway revival of Grease. In this role, his powerhouse vocals, a familiar sound to anyone who spent some time in a Baptist, AME, or Pentecostal pew, put him on the map. 3 years later, he released his debut R&B album, Untitled, to minor fanfare as his identity was said to be guaranteed deterrent to success. In my first record deal on A&M Records, I spent a lot of time inside of the hamster wheel of, quote unquote, is he masculine enough? And will anybody believe him? He recalls quite matter-of-factly, it was all about, you're a F-A-G-O-T, go away. Such blatant homophobia is what ignited perhaps the first major conversation he started. This one, however, was with himself. As he was forced to decide between deception, impossible fame, and his sanity. I chose myself over whatever might be, he says, noting that choosing to lean into his truth led to a number of years of unemployment and being on the brink of obscurity and bankruptcy. But by taking myself out of the masculinity game that literally turned my life around, and all of those layers were building blocks to the authentic human being you see in front of you who gives zero fucks. When I actually leaned into my truth, he adds, this is what ultimately happened. Did it take 2+ decades? Yes, but it's happening, and this is my ministry. The immense success he's enjoying is due in large part to his role as the sharp-tongued MC in Ryan Murphy's Pose, the TV drama based on the 1980s New York City underground ballroom scene from which Black and Latinx LGBTQ plus people gifted the world with the voguing dance style that has inspired celebrities from Madonna to Rihanna. 2020 Essence Black Women in Hollywood honoree Janet Mock writes, directs, and produces the show, which also stars fellow Black women in Hollywood honorees MJ Rodriguez, India Moore, Dominique Jackson, Haley Sahar, and Angelica Ross. Porter says his role was one of the first that allowed him to bring his full self as a community elder who came of age at the height of the AIDS crisis. The role also catapulted Porter to stardom in his late 40s. And with this newfound fame, which he impresses on me, only came because he chose authenticity over notoriety those many years ago. He's making sure that his presence is felt, whether he's on the 2019 Oscars, red carpet, in a jaw-dropping, gender-bending Christian Siriano black velvet tuxedo gown, or in a couture Michael Kors black and white pinstripe suit, platform heels, and an oversized Stephen Jones hat to rival any church mothers at last year's Emmys, where he became the first Black gay man to win Best Actor in a Drama Series. And that to his Grammy and Tony Awards for his Broadway role in Kinky Boots. And he's just an Oscar away from EGOT status. During our call, Porter revisited the opening line of the speech he gave on Emmy night, in which he quotes Black gay writer James Baldwin. It took years of me vomiting up the filth that I was told about myself and halfway believed before I could walk around the earth like I deserve to be here, he says. But the filth was not only coming from white people, the filth was coming from my own. This statement brings us back to the social unrest unfolding in every state in America, and another necessary conversation to be had, one about the emotional and physical violence Black LGBTQ plus people face from some cisgender and heterosexual members of the Black community. 2 days after George Floyd was killed, for example, a Black trans masculine person named Tony McDade was shot and killed by police in Tallahassee, Florida. His name and memory aren't uplifted very often as protesters take to the streets. And when we look at the epidemic level rates at which Black trans women are dying, we have to confront the fact that their killers are overwhelmingly Black men. These realities need to be factored in to how patriarchy, homophobia, and transphobia within the Black community exacerbates the effects of racism and white supremacy we're already battling. "Stop killing us," Porter screams in frustration. His hand trembles as if searching for something to ground him. "Our trans women are out here dying at the hands of our own. We can't ask for anything more than what we're ready to give. It starts with us first, and I'm calling it out." A silence falls over the call. I can feel his rage through my laptop screen and his plea that our communities, Black Lives Matter, refrain be extended to all Black lives, regardless of sexuality and gender. When he starts speaking again, he directly addresses conservative Black people. "You all want to act like you're concerned about our salvation," he says, alluding to some beliefs that being LGBTQ+ isn't of God. "But don't worry about my salvation. Let me do that. If you think I'm going to hell, you keep that blank to yourself. I don't need tolerance. I don't need acceptance. We demand respect for our humanity too." "You want the police to stop being brutal," he continues. "Okay, yeah, I'm with you. But this man over here that you all love to mess with, I'm Black first." Porter acknowledges that these conversations are beginning to happen, as evidenced by support he's received from people like Tyler Perry and Diddy, and through this very Essence cover. "I'm very excited to engage in this conversation and have Essence have my back, because it's those of us in positions of power in our community who can change conversation," he says. "I'm so moved by the olive branch that this is saying to the world and to our community collectively that LGBTQ+ Black people are Black people first, and we need to be supported and honored too. Stop killing us like everybody else is." For the past year, Porter has been using his platform to encourage his fans and admirers to vote in the upcoming presidential election in November. That's why he recently released a cover of Buffalo Springfield's 1966 classic, For What It's Worth, a contribution of protest music to frame the moment. "Being that I'm first generation, post-civil rights, and that as a gay man, I'm feeding directly into the AIDS crisis. Activism is in my DNA," he says. "And while I don't fancy myself an organizer, you tell me where to show up. I'm going to show up. I'm that kind of activist." Porter sees using his voice as his ministry, one that came from the church, but is not tethered to the doctrine in a way that oppresses, he says, but which gives him a way to inspire hope and change. Plainly put, he wants Donald Trump, or as he calls him, Orange Gina 45, out of the office. And he believes the only way to ensure that is by all of us showing up at the ballot box. "We must play the game that we're in," he says, preempting concerns some have about how ineffective politics can be in producing substantive change, and complaints about Joe Biden becoming the Democratic nominee over more progressive candidates. "We get in power and then we change the law. That's how you do it. That's how it's set up. With that understanding, get your little asses registered. Remember the fact that people die for us to have the right and go vote." Before our Zoom call ends, I ask about his upcoming projects, including a guest starring role in Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone, reboot this summer. But chief among them is Porter playing the fairy godparent in Sony's live-action remake of Cinderella, the role Whitney Houston flawlessly portrayed in Disney's Brandy-fronted version. When the film is released at the top of 2021, it will be perhaps the first time that the character is played by a man. Porter is unsure how that will be received by mass audiences, but one thing is sure, it will start a conversation, and Billy Porter, as always, is ready for it. The next article is titled, No Justice, No Peace. Essence own Lensman captured images of protesters defending Black lives as thousands across the nation march for racial justice. Our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay, so declared the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1967. Some 53 years later, we are haunted by the resonance of his words as Black people continue to be plagued by this country's history of racial violence. Still, we are not deterred. In the dawn of summer 2020, we once again took to the streets to demand justice, this time in the wake of the brutal killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, boldly confronting concerns of a global pandemic and state-sanctioned retribution, protesters turned out by the hundreds of thousands in cities around the world. Photographer J.D. Barnes' images speak to the collective emotion driving the movement for change. Whether you call it a riot or an uprising, Black America's righteousness rage was at fever pitch. In the many days and nights of unrest, critics slammed looting and chaos, many of them overlooking how much of it was caused by police deploying tear gas and violence. The demand to reform a deeply flawed system is never perfect. Yes, we are full of fire and fury, but those flames in our summer streets are needed to melt America's winter of delay. The title of the next article is Seeking Fitness and Fellowship. The coronavirus pandemic has altered many facets of everyday life in unprecedented ways. It has changed the way we work, the way we socialize, and even the way we exercise. I am a self-professed fitness junkie who enjoys the community and camaraderie of my preferred methods of movement, namely yoga and CrossFit. So it took me a while to adjust to the new state of play. For now, I won't be hearing powerful breathing, a calming breath technique, also known as victorious breath, that regulates body heat, echoing across a heated yoga studio, or cheers as I see my fellow CrossFit lovers smash a personal record. Fortunately, there is a silver lining to this new reality. Fitness communities still exist, but they're on our screens where social media and other tech tools create a space for us to reach out and convene. Here, fitness instructors share how people are finding pure connection and belonging when it is not possible to work out together in the same room. Pylin, a nice certified yoga teacher, joining together in a yoga class like on a Zoom call can work, says Pylin A. Nice, a New York-based certified yoga teacher, of how the pandemic has forced us to reimagine our fitness practices. A Nice also welcomes her students reaching out to talk through the feelings that the pandemic and subsequent lockdowns have evoked. I think it's important that we talk about what we're experiencing, she says. We have to stay connected to other people as much as we can. It's a challenging time for everyone, and there's really no solution other than to sit with the feelings and moves as much as we can. Find ways to connect with your Sangha, your community of yogis or yoga instructors. They are there to serve you and be there for you when you're seeking guidance. Alicia Ace Easter, a certified yoga teacher in Los Angeles, encourages students in her virtual classes to ask questions in the group chat in order to prompt conversations among those who may want to linger for a few minutes after class. It helps people feel like they're hanging out at the yoga studio, talking to their friends, Easter says. That definitely helps everyone feel more connected. Many instructors and students are also fostering a sense of togetherness by cheering on the fitness achievements of others around them. For us, a big part of our in-person community is being there when everyone else reaches a new goal, says Sarah, quote-unquote, Say K. Brown, the co-owner of CrossFit HCS in Ferndale, Michigan. So we've tried to continue that throughout our social media. We have our private Facebook groups and Instagram accounts where we post highlights so people can feel proud of themselves for attaining goals outside of the gym. For example, Brown adds, one member's 15K run was canceled, but she still laced up her shoes and ran the entire route, sharing her experience with other HCS members afterward. Like A Nice, Brown has made a point of reaching out to the members to ensure they're receiving the emotional support they need, whether they live alone or are struggling to find time for their usual wellness routine while they are home with their kids. I try to keep that relationship going where I can ask, okay, how is this pandemic affecting you? Brown says, how can I support your mental health? She's even set up a Zoom yoga sessions and one-on-one video chats as check-ins. We're able to do that because we're such a small community, she says. A feeling of community can be just as beneficial for children as for adults, suggests Karen McDonald, director of the Deben Alley Dance Academy in Los Angeles, which has been conducting virtual classes during the pandemic. Some students have shared that before the classes started being offered online, they felt very alone, McDonald says. I've even had some parents say they can tell that their children are much happier because now they are able to see their friends and interact with their friends. And even though it's online, they actually feel the physical energy and the spirit of each other. The fitness practitioners agree on the importance of keeping up with your movement routine as much as possible, even if in all the current chaos, you sometimes struggle to find the will to move. We are naturally rhythmic beings, A Nice explains. So having a movement practice offers a way of coming back to yourself at a time when we're constantly bombarded with all these stressful news headlines and there's so much worry and uncertainty. It's why McDonald encourages her young students to dance often. Movement is life and dance is movement, she reflects. We have been moving since the womb. There is a natural force within us that wants us to move. And so when we dance, it just really helps us experience that force. It fires us up It connects the mind and the body and the spirit. It allows us to sweat, which is really cleansing. It allows us to free our muscles up so we're not stiff. Dancing, she notes, is good for us on many levels. It gives us an opportunity to open up and experience every part of ourselves in every area of our lives. Actually, I run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Ebony is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org. You can also give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. The North Carolina Reading Service. We breathe words into your life.